Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So when you grew up in Liverpool,
yeah.
What? Are you trying to get the job as Desert Island Discs presenter?
Yeah, this is me.
How do the poor people live? Tell us stories of poverty, Adam. What was it like dipping bread in water? Did you share shoes?
It's a tin bath in the garden every second Sunday.
What did you do for fun? What were you like growing up as a kid though? Were you one of the funny kids or were you one of like...
He had a thigh in his eye, mate.
Yeah.
That was my entire personality, yeah.
But surely that for you had to be... You then had to kind of be like the sort of fun, entertaining one because they were calling you this.
No, like, the school I went to, it didn't matter who you were. There was always something to call you. Do you know what I mean? Everyone got schizophrenia.
School is tough, man, for that. It really is tough for that.
Yeah. But I do think it prepares you for life a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Getting bullied a little bit. I think getting bullied a little bit is
I think bullying is good, isn't it?
Wait, hang on, to an extent.
Why do you think it's good, Tom? Why do you think it's good?
Thick skin.
Yeah.
I just think a bit of...
You made a lot of money out of it.
Yeah. I did, that's true. I think it's... I don't know, just if you don't get bullied at all as a kid, and then when you're older and then people start, you won't be able to handle it, you'll just fall apart, won't you?
Yeah.
Because if you get used to it.
I think there's always a little bit of, everyone receives...
It's not bullying either.
It's not bullying.
Just like English.
Bullying might not be the right term, because I think bullying's got like stigmas of like suicide, people killing themselves, such that teasing and sort of getting the piss taken out of you, I think that prepares you for life.
But that's English people, like the way that we show that we like someone is by taking the piss out.
By taking them down.
Yeah.
But why do we have that as humour?
It's great, I think.
I think it's good as well. I really do. Yeah. And it does, like, you're so right. It does kind of, because at school, I think all the older years used to kind of take the piss. But even though you're having the piss taken out of you, it's a sense of respect, weirdly.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the same? People in Liverpool do that to each other the entire time, don't you? You just shout at things at each other.
Yeah,
always.
And like the weirdest kids, the weird ones who were over there, they never got picked on because they were just too. It felt too bad to do anything.
It's like a badge of honour to be picked on.
Yeah. If you got picked on, it meant you weren't low enough to not be picked on.
Yeah.
Everyone, welcome back to part 2 of Private Parts. Here with Adam Rowe and my co-host Tom Lucy. What's up, team?
Good. Yeah.
I zoned out.
You
didn't say that.
I was thinking about the polar bear fucking the grizzly bear.
Yeah. Oh, that answer is coming up in a second. Hey, Tom, I want to ask you a question, right? Have you ever? We spoke about this the other day, where you went and did a gig, and before the guy went on stage, he was super confident, and you were like, he's not going to have a good gig.
Oh, just... there was just, you'll know what I mean about Adam. There was a, I was just doing this gig and there was a new guy doing the open spot in the middle, American guy. And in the dressing room before, he was so cocky and confident. And every all the other comics in the room, when he left the room to go and do the gig, we were all like, he's going to fucking tank. And he went on and fucking died. But it was, we could just tell because he was so confident.
But I don't get that. This is what I don't understand, is because I would assume in comedy, the having confidence is quite a good thing to have.
No.
But why?
Absolutely not. Well, to a point, you've got to be confident in your own ability and feel comfortable. But too much confidence showing, especially in Britain, they just go, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, but it's also too much confidence. If you don't have any material and you're really confident, that's the worst combination.
It's why, like, comedians get introduced differently in the UK to the US. So, like, in America, before you go on stage, the compere will go, you've seen this guy on Comedy Central. He's done Conan O'Brien. He's done Showtime at the Apollo. Give it up for Tom Lucy. And the audience go, oh, my God, all those credits? That's good. But if he did that...
It wouldn't happen here.
Get 35 people going, go ahead then.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, this is about, why does that happen? Because we don't celebrate success? What is
it? Yeah, we
just don't like people building themselves up.
We don't like people bragging over there.
It's like when you go and watch an American comic do a show. Like, I went to see Kevin Hart at the O2. And he, like, there's so much fanfare before he comes on stage. And
Dan Nightingale used to do a routine about that, about how there's such a big build-up.
Yeah.
Before Kevin Hart, this big introduction, and he like used to do like a parody of it. Like, oh, I can't wait till I'm successful and I've got
Kevin Hart's intro was hilarious.
So you come to the O2, you sit in the crowd, and what happens?
When there was a video before he came on stage, and it was like a 5-minute video, and it was just listing all of his credit, everything he's ever done. And then it got to like really tenuous things when it was like
he's got his 7-meter swimming bag.
Yeah, it was like it was things like he runs a production company. It's like, who gives a shit that he runs a production company?
He's one stamp away from a free Costa coffee.
Yeah. So it started with all this amazing, like, how many tickets he's sold, awards, and then it just got down and down, and it was like, dude, just fucking come on stage. The point is that if a British comic tried to do that, we would all go, fuck this guy. You wouldn't like it.
But is that a bad thing or is it a good thing? Or is that just, what do you think?
It's just different, I think. It's just different, so...
But weirdly, though, in London, if it's an American comic, we kind of go with it because they're American.
Yeah, unless we don't know who they are. Like, when you know who they are, like Kevin Hart or Dave Chappelle or anything like that...
That's the problem with this American guy.
No one knew who he was. Yeah, he's going on in the middle
and
of
And he came on
conference.
Like Kevin Hart.
So what did he do? So what was his thing?
Well, the first thing that pissed me off was he brought a stool on. And he's doing an open spot and he sat down.
He brought it on?
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't already on there.
Even before he said hello, he sat down really slowly and had a sip of his beer, and I was like, fuck this guy. And the whole audience went, I hate this guy.
I will, if there's a stool already there, depending on the vibe of the gig, occasionally I will sort of lean on it or sit down a bit.
But I think it's different if you're like headlining the gig or if you know what you're doing.
And if they already like it, you can't walk on and say nothing with your own stool, set it up, get it, the angles
swing
perfect.
The beer.
God, it's so funny how there are so many like unwritten rules that you have to do and you can't do that, how you can
But that's
lose
not even a comedy rule, that's a life rule. Don't be a cunt.
Yeah, but
don't bring a stool in.
But you know what I mean? It's so true that there are these little rules like, show confidence, but don't show too much confidence.
Yeah.
It's not even that. It's justify your confidence.
Yeah.
If you're
fucking amazing, you're allowed. You can be confident. Yeah. And, you know, like Chris Rock or something like that.
Do you know what I find weird as well? And I find this is a problem with Australian comics in particular. Mm-hmm. Some comics go on as if the audience know who they are.
Yeah.
Right. So they'll go on and be like, what's happening, guys? Good to be here. So
thanks for coming.
Yeah, literally though. Like, it's good to be back in Liverpool. It's good to be. And the audience is like, "Who the fuck are you, mate?" Like,
yeah.
We don't know you. Tell some jokes and get us on board. Like, and Australian comics do that a lot. They go on as if it's their fans, and you can't play a club gig as if it's your fan base.
It's a British thing, I think. In America, it's maybe a bit different.
But how was Kevin Hart impressive or no?
I thought he was good, yeah. But I just made me laugh how different it is to a British show. it just wouldn't work. I can't imagine like Josh Widdicombe. I think Josh is great, but I just can't imagine him having this big fanfare before he comes out.
But it's interesting with someone like Kevin Hart though, right? It's like, but hello. You're playing to the O2 and it's like 50,000 impression of Josh Widdicombe. You're like, hello.
I was just thinking of Josh's credits that would come up on the video.
And he comes and
he's got a son.
He's from Devon.
He doesn't owe anyone any money.
He bought his house without a mortgage.
but with someone like Kevin Hart, you're performing at like the O2, which is like 50,000 people. Yeah, it's a lot of seats, but does that ruin the comedy style? Because you're playing to so many people. Is that just whatever?
It depends on the style of act. I think some styles of comedy, and I think Kevin Hart is one of them, is suited to big rooms. And Michael McIntyre is the same. If you can fill the room with your energy and persona,
yeah,
then it doesn't matter how big the room is. But I think, like, I would like to think I could do big theatres, but I don't think I move enough and fill the stage enough to, if I ever got to the point where I was lucky enough to sell enough tickets to do arenas, I don't know whether I'd do it. I reckon I'd do more nights in smaller
theatres.
Yeah,
but I think you could learn to do it.
You could, yeah, but then it depends whether you want to, doesn't it? Yeah. Whether you want to come away from who you are. Yeah. Certain comics are suited to those big rooms. Kevin Bridges is amazing at filling a big room. McIntyre's the same. But
I think that someone like Kevin like would have learnt to like that when he's in a big room he has to walk around more, he has to be bigger.
But I couldn't imagine, because again he's brilliant, so it's like, weird that we keep bringing him up, but Josh Widdicombe doing an hour in an arena doesn't fit for me in my head.
Yeah, yeah. But someone like Lee Evans, because he was just so erratic and so hectic, that's why it kind of worked well for him.
Sprinting up and down, he's sweaty.
All those comics that you talk about who are great in arenas all would have started in tiny clubs. So they must have been good in small clubs as well.
Yeah, totally.
I can't imagine what Lee Evans would be like in a comedy store or...
Must be me. I'm really looking for... That's one of the things I'm looking forward to the most about that show tonight. Is getting to see Michael McIntyre play the Comedy Store.
He's great in those little rooms.
Yeah,
he's
fucking I've never seen it.
Is he very good?
Oh, he's fucking great anywhere, but seeing him in front of that many people is like, yeah.
What I always say about Michael McIntyre, because obviously when you get into conversations with sort of normal people about comedy and comedians and stuff, they'll bring up like, what comedians like? I like this guy, I like that guy. And some people are like, I don't like that Michael McIntyre. It doesn't make me laugh. And then some people love him. I think Michael McIntyre, he's not my favourite comedian, but he is the best comedian this country has ever produced.
Why? In what way?
I just think I would rather follow anyone else but him.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a worse act to have to go on after.
But what, because he's so commercially loved?
Because he's so good at getting every single laugh out of any idea. You could say to him, go and do 5 minutes about this glass... And he would probably be able to do it and make it funny. And he would get literally every laugh possible out of that concept. Yeah. He had like a 10-minute routine about a man draw, about the stuff.
Yeah, it's so funny.
There's no one else who can do that.
He's incredible, yeah.
But also with something like that, like, but he came late to the comedy circuit, didn't he? Or no?
He didn't come late, but he was around for like 10 years before he got anywhere.
He was probably about 30 by the time he started, maybe.
What, started getting famous?
Started comedy, I thought.
I think he was like 30 when he got famous. I think he started comedy at like 23, 24.
Oh, really? I didn't know that, yeah.
But how
old were you? How old were you?
He was like 14 when he started.
I was 16 when I started.
Yeah. I was 18. Both quite young to be doing comedy, because you've got fuck all to talk about.
You were 18?
Yeah, yeah.
18. But I heard with Tom, I heard that you apparently, when you did your first gig, you phoned up all the agencies and said...
Who told you that?
Said, big name coming down.
Oh, Christ.
And you did, and they were like...
What the fuck do you know that?
Yeah.
That's not exactly what happened.
But apparently they turned up, you smashed the gig at like 17 years old, and then you were pretty much like, right, 5 minutes each of you, what do you want me?
That makes me sound like
it wasn't like that. I'm amped up. But that confidence to kind of go, you knew you need to be repped, you want to be repped.
I did have like an unbelievable... I think you have exactly the same... I know you have the same thing. I did have like a crazy like level of focus and determination.
When I was
16, 17, it was all I cared about.
What's quite funny is I got a reputation for a while and a completely justified one for being a rapid self-promoter. So when I was doing a gig in Coventry, I added on my Facebook, I'm doing a gig tonight in Coventry at the Showcase Cinema. Here's all the things. And people were like... oh, shut up, lad, no one gives a shit about your gigs. And then I was putting like little videos out and people were like, what are you doing that for? Stop sharing your videos, just do your gigs. And like older school comics and also acts that started with me were sneering at it because they weren't doing it. And
now, but I hate that. That's.
But now the same people come to me and go, help me. I love how he did that.
Help me.
He shook his head and he went, help me.
Not in the comedy sense.
Like, people ask for
like
advice.
You're some sort of prophet.
Yeah. People ask for advice because, like, I've
wasted
done
talent.
I should be a consultant. I'm wasted in comedy. Yeah. I've done one TV show, which was the stand-up sketch show for the people who create this podcast, Media. And despite that, I'm about to do my third tour, and it's all from social media, building a following. And there's acts who've been going longer than me who are better comics who couldn't do it all
at all,
even now.
But social media is huge because Kevin Hart, lots of his stuff is seen on social media, and that's how he's kind of followed like loads. Like in Holland and all these different places, that's how they...
We were talking before we started, there's people in our industry at the minute saying YouTube is the future.
Oh, yeah. So I was talking to this guy. I was chatting to a guy the other day who works in comedy, not a comedian, but in the industry, like a producer, quite a senior guy. And we were chatting and he said, oh, the thing is, mate, he said, YouTube's the future. I was like, what? YouTube's the present? Do you mean YouTube's the future?
YouTube was the future 15 years ago.
Yeah, and Adam went, and the past. YouTube's the past. It's not even the present.
Wait, he said that to you. Listen, mate, YouTube is...
It's just hilarious how some people who work in the industry have got no idea what's going on.
No.
Because it's changing so quickly.
And it will continue to change so quickly. Like, there'll be another social media platform in a couple of years that is entirely for artists, I think. Yeah. I think there'll be like a creator thing that is led by creators and where we earn money from it. Whereas like at the minute, YouTube takes quite a lot of the advertising revenue and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I can see a creator-led and focused social media that becomes massive.
But also, you know, and Tom, I've asked you this before, but Adam, with you as well, you know, you said you started at 18 years old. At 18 years old, and then you're 17, I had no fucking clue what I wanted to do. How did you know that you were...
Oh,
like,
I didn't know I wanted to do it.
But you still went and did it. That's, like, unbelievable.
I did it because I loved stand-up, and me mate said he was going to do it. So I was working in McDonald's when I was planning to do stand-up, and one of the shift managers in there, we used to try and like time our breaks together so that we could watch stand-up on like the staff computers together. He'd go, oh, I found this bit the other night, watch this. And we were both obsessed.
So there was that love and that obsession there. So you understood what good and bad comedy was.
Oh, yeah. Well, like my mum introduced me to stand-up when I was like quite young. And the first stand-up I seen was Richard Pryor, which is quite a ridiculous introduction for what was like a 9-year-old or something. But I loved
your mum showed you Richard Pryor at 9.
Yeah.
Adam, come watch Richard talk about the N-word. That explains your comedy.
Never said the N-word on stage. Only in WhatsApp groups.
Christ. Was stand-up a big thing in your house then? People watched it?
Me and my mum used to watch it all the time, yeah. So I loved it from early on. And then Dave, that shift manager, was like, I'm going to give stand-up a go. Should we do it? And I went, yeah, I'll give it a go. Why not? And then I thought it would be one of those things that just didn't happen. You know, things you plan with your mates.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that won't happen. And literally about 2 hours later, he rang me. He was like, we've got a gig. My local pub's going to let us put a night on. So we've got a gig. Start writing your material and we'll have to sell some tickets. And we sold 120 tickets to our like friends and family.
Well, it wasn't That's even insane. Like an open mic gig. It was just...
Well, it was an open mic gig, but we'd set it up.
Oh, right.
So we charged like £3 each and we split all the money between every act. Every act got the same, like 40, 50 quid or something.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, and the rest is historic.
I still don't understand the confidence to get up. I always say this to him, the confidence to get up on stage at like 17 years old and stand in front of a crowd and go, right, here we go.
But I don't think that when you're that age...
I don't think it's confidence.
When you're that age,
I think it's actually insecurity and stupidity.
Yeah.
So you think it's naivety? You just go, okay, fine, I'm just going to go and do this.
I think it's a need for validation. And that's quite a
totally, I get
cynical
it.
Way to look at it. It's... I need people.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
People to laugh at me. I need people to think I'm good at something. I need people to think I'm funny. I think that subconsciously is what drives you onto stage in the first place, especially if you're younger. I think it's just you're either really good at making your mates laugh already and you're like, oh, I want more of that, or you're not making anyone laugh.
But there are some people who, like, you know, make their mates laugh and they're funny, but they don't have like a need to get on stage.
Yeah.
Most people are like that.
Yeah.
Very few people have that like need to
actually go and do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then interesting enough, you look at this way, where do you lead to, right? So is it just about getting bigger arenas and building, and then when you hit the pinnacle, you do the O2 or Wembley or whatever it is?
Pinnacle's the name of my tour this year, so thanks for the plug there. That was good. Superb work, Jamie. Superb.
But when do you, you know, when you start doing that, like, okay, there's a prime example of what it is. Lee Evans, right? Huge comedian, especially. He then quits. Yeah. But why? Why do comedians get to a point
because
sometimes when they don't want to do it anymore?
He's probably got a boat. Like, he's multi-millionaire.
But again, it's not, you know, for you guys, obviously, and for most people, I'd say it's not about the money.
But I don't know if you ever, like, hit a point where you are like completely satisfied.
No.
Because I've spent like, and I know you've as well, like, spent a lot of time with people who are at a level where you would think, oh, they've made it, or they've got everything they would ever want. Yeah. And spending time with them off stage, you can see that they're not walking around going, fuck, I've made it, this is amazing.
That's my thing, right? There's no like ceiling.
They're going, fuck, I've got to do the O2 tomorrow. that's what they're thinking.
Yeah. I don't think I'll ever be satisfied. And I think that's why I enjoy the game. I enjoy there being a next level that you've got to get to.
You never hit the end
and
of it.
There's an old Jim Jefferies routine, which I think like sums it up perfectly, and I'll butcher this now, but he's like, when I first started, all I wanted to do was 5 minutes, and then I got to do 5 minutes. I was like, right, now I want to do 10. And I was like, right, now I want to do 20. Now I want to get paid, and I got paid, and then I was like, now I want to be the headliner, and I was the headliner, and I was like, now I want a tour, and I did a little tour, and I was like, right, oh, if I can do a bigger tour, I'll be happy. And then I did a bigger tour, and then if I can do Just for Laughs Montreal, I'll be happy. And I got it. And I was like, right, now I want to do Edinburgh Festival and sell out me run. And now I want to do this. And now I want to be a movie star. And do you know what? I'm not a movie star. And it fucking kills me every single day.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That is the mentality. That's so much. There's always a next level to it. One thing I struggle with is, and you'll know this, once you or a comic who is doing fairly well and you have like a nice run at the Edinburgh Festival, or you're just doing well in comedy clubs and people take notice and hear about you, your agent will set up meetings with producers. And a lot of producers and production companies are like, so what are you using stand-up for? What's the goal? Do you want to be a TV presenter in films? And I struggle with those meetings so much because all I want to do is stand-up and a bigger tour and a bigger tour and a bigger tour. Mm. I want to get better at stand-up. I'm utterly obsessed with it to a
that's
fault.
That's such a good way that you follow your purpose, and that's what you desire to. Tom, if you could say, if someone could say what you would love to do, if they said in your future, what would you love to do? What would you say?
Well, I kind of feel a bit similar to you. I sort of feel like stand up is like, I'll never stop doing stand-up. I would like to do other things, but I would always do stand-up. Because it's just like the best... I don't know. It's not easy, but the fact that you can completely control it.
That's the coolest thing about you guys. Yeah. You can go and do acting, you go and do this, you can write stuff, all that kind of stuff, but you can always just report back to going on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Picking the mic up and doing it. You have complete control over it.
Yeah.
It's not even just that with me. I'm so competitive and always have been. And if I'm good at something, I get extra competitive at it. So like, if we have a game of Monopoly, I don't care if you win. I want to win, but I don't care because I'm not good at Monopoly and there's no skill to it. If we have a game of FIFA and you beat me, I will break my pad because I'm good at FIFA. So if you're better than me at it, it drives
me fucking
insane.
Stick around for that
insane.
In part three. Adam Rowe smashes a Samsung in part three.
I've smashed 6 PlayStation pads since I bought
my PS4. Oh my God. No, man. Yeah, because you get that angry.
Yeah, because I just throw them.
I think the root of this problem is you need to go to bed earlier. All of the problems can be sorted, right?
But also with you, Adam, you did Edinburgh Festival and you got Dave's joke of the festival.
Yeah.
That's huge though, man, right?
It is. It was slightly more hassle than it was worth.
Can you tell us the joke on this one?
Yeah, so the joke was... I wouldn't like to work at the job centre. Imagine working somewhere knowing if you get fired, you still have to go in the next day.
Right. It's good. I liked it.
It's a good one-liner. Now, apparently, someone did a similar joke to that in like the 70s or the 80s. Not the exact same thing, but very similar. And when I won it, every newspaper reported it in a really nice way. I got like a full 2-page spread in The Telegraph. The Guardian did a big feature on it. The Scotsman. You're on the front page of every national newspaper on the next day, which is unbelievable coverage for someone at my level. It sold out the last week of my Edinburgh Festival run, and it sold me quite a lot of tour tickets as well for after the Edinburgh Festival. There was one newspaper, and I refuse to name it without spitting, so I won't. But they said that I'd stolen it. Right, and their sources.
Was it a Liverpool thing?
It was a newspaper that Liverpool is staunchly against.
Oh, I know
that
I know who it is.
I
know who it is.
Who is it?
Well, you don't want me to say.
I don't want their names to be on it now. Okay. I really don't. So I'll tell you
it's
afterwards.
The Surrey Advertiser.
It's the Surrey Advertiser. They cited 2 sources on Twitter to say, oh, he's stolen it. These 2 Twitter accounts have found an old tweet where it had been tweeted like 10 years ago. Those 2 Twitter accounts that they cited were both verified and both had about 1,000 followers. And within a week, both of those accounts had been deleted.
So you suspect some foul play?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And what had happened was this particular newspaper before Edinburgh had asked me, do you want a full 2-page feature to promote Edinburgh your tour through my publicist? They got in touch enough with that. And I very publicly told them to go fuck themselves. Mm. And
I think I might have done that. I think I did it. What are you rocks?
You're welcome, mate.
You know what's funny about this?
I think it was a retaliation to that.
The newspaper that you're talking about, that same year, they gave me Best New Comedian.
Like, that fucking Scouse cunt doesn't want to work with us. Let's find a posh one. That'll wind them up.
That's great. So I'm a big fan. No, I know what you mean. That is bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is annoying.
I've never heard that before.
Also, the worst thing in the world I can imagine as a comedian is when someone says you're stealing jokes or taking jokes.
Yeah, and like, look, there's been times on stage where I've said something and gone, in a bit of numbers, a little bit of crowd work, and gone, hang on. There's no way that is something I've just come up with off the top of my head. Mm. And then,
yeah, mandrill rings a bell.
So you like comedians will sometimes. I've just done 10 minutes about a mandrill and opening it and entertainment batteries and foreign currency.
Let me move on. Anyway.
Garlic bread. And what you do then is you text a couple of mates and go, have you heard a routine like this before? And sometimes they go, no. And you go, oh, I've got a new bit. Then you start doing it. And sometimes they go, oh, it's similar to this.
Is that worry sometimes happen where you come up with something, you're worried that someone else has done it before?
You just text your mates and go, have you heard a routine like this? Like, we've all got sort of comic mates who you can sort of bounce an idea off and go, what do you think of this? Have you heard anything
similar? But there's also like so, like there's, it happens all the time where that you're just covering a topic that someone else is, you can still do the
same. You can cover the same topic.
Yeah, it's just sometimes it's just, the joke's
like, is this routine too similar to something you've heard before?
Yeah.
But with that, joke, like the most annoying thing about it was, first of all, it was one of the weakest jokes in my show. Like it never got like a massive laugh. Because it's not that type of joke, and it doesn't really... It's not the type of humour I really do. The reason that
it's
joke...
It's like a one-liner, isn't it?
It's a one-liner, essentially. Yeah. And the reason it was in my show was I did sort of a two-minute bit in the show where there was not even an attempt at a joke. It was just making a point about how people in the benefit system are treated by the people who are meant to help and protect them, i.e. the job centre and whatever. And that punchline was there to release all of the tension out of that 2 minutes of monologue. So it was a really important joke in the show. And for that last week of the Edinburgh Festival, the whole show is sold out. It's full of 150 people every day who already know that joke. So I do 2 minutes of tension building, then tell that joke and 150 people go, yeah, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
He's done it. Yeah, should we go now? There's 15 minutes left, but I'm not really bothered, are you?
I love it. It's so weird to have a whole audience that you know are just waiting for that one joke.
It's always famous.
There it is.
Yeah.
Joke of the fridge.
Do they laugh or no? They just went, oh, there it is.
For that last week, it didn't get a single laugh once. It got a few, and it got a few, way, but it never got a laugh. And then it was driving me so mad that when I toured that exact same show, I just took it out. I rewrote that whole bit. And put a different joke and a different point in.
Yeah.
Just because I was sick of telling that joke to people who'd already heard it. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I was very grateful for the award. And it helped me a lot. And you get a decent bit of prize money as well. So it was...
£500,000, right?
Half a million. Half a million and a boat. Yeah, boat, yeah.
Not bad, eh?
£500,000 for writing a joke.
How much Tom pays his races?
See how much Tom pays his racists?
Writers. How's he paying his racists? Yeah. Hey, tell us a racist joke. It was £4,000.
I've got a team of racists behind me.
Right, ladies and gentlemen.
Just helping you to be racist.
As racist as
possible. No, you can push that further, Tom. You can push that further.
There's more in that, mate. You can get more out of that.
I want to see the hatred in your eyes. Spit on the floor or something.
Let's brainstorm some ideas.
Right, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we have the answer to the question of the week. Now, the question was, if a polar bear and a grizzly bear mate, their offspring is called a what?
Grizzly.
You said Prizzly. Tom, you said...
I think I said...
Grizzola.
Like a granola bar.
Yeah, like a granola bar. Grizzola bear.
Grizzola bear.
You're both so posh, you know. That your brain goes straight to granola.
Yeah.
Is that part? Is granola bar
part? Really?
Yeah, it is. You can't eat granola in Liverpool.
Yeah, you can.
No, we eat gravel.
A gravel bar.
Granola. The answer is Pizzy Bear.
Really?
Yeah,
what website is that from?
It's called hashtag Factsite. I typed in 1,000 full of interesting facts about literally anything. I'll give you another one. In 2006, a Coca-Cola employee offered to sell Coca-Cola secrets to Pepsi. Pepsi responded by notifying Coca-Cola.
Wow, that's a real fact, that.
That's not even a fact.
Try and write a film around that. That's great.
Imagine trying to drag that out for an hour and a half.
Hey, Adam, you are going on tour at the end of this year.
I am.
Where can we get tickets from?
AdamRowe.co.uk, AdamRowe.co.uk, and they're not on sale yet, but the Edinburgh Fringe is on sale. So if you search my name on the Edinburgh Fringe website, you come see that. Shows at 7:30.
Quite a good little slot, isn't it?
It's a nice time, and this is the first year where I'm not doing any other additional shows. Like I normally do a couple of like packet shows or like little guest spots elsewhere. I'm not doing any of that this year. Just doing my show and then getting pissed every day.
Tom, are we going to go up to Edinburgh?
Yeah, we're going to go up together, aren't we?
Where are we going to be doing stuff?
Doing stuff?
I think we should go up there and just hang around.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam, thank you.
Adam is genuinely great as well. I've worked with him a lot and he's fucking great.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
You're good too.
Hey, maybe we should probably work together soon as well, man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing some gigs.
Yeah, he's a big dog on the circuit.
Now, doing
lot
some
of buzz around JB. A lot of buzz
around this guy over here. Hey, Adam, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, dude. Hey, best of luck with everything. Super funny.
Thank you.
Super, cheers, okay, dude, man. I can't wait to come watch your tour. What we like to do at the end of the podcast is leave our listeners with something inspirational. Everyone always looks blank whenever that happens.
It's because you don't warn anyone.
I don't warn anyone ever. Didn't warn you about anything today.
You need to learn about preparation.
Work hard and don't be a cunt.
You heard it here first.
Thank you so much. I'll see you next week. Goodbye!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.